What spooky scaries exist in this continuation reboot of the classic 1960s yokai monster movie trilogy? Can a tie-in with a classic kaiju be enough to elevate this adjacent property? And will this movie scratch that itch we have for some more Daimajin? Find out along with us. This is Kaiju vs. History, The Great Yokai War Guardians.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is a giant army of 100 ghosts. Miles here, and joining me is the big bad Bujin statue himself, Patrick. Patrick, how are you doing today?
Grumble, grumble, rock, rock, rock. Yes, 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 yes. We are back talking about yokai, which I love, Miles. I love yokai.
I also love yokai.
I have not watched the other films in this, you know, very loosely kind of thrown together Akawa / Toho yokai monsters series, but I've watched a good amount of clips from the 60s films.
Arrow, I think, was put out the trilogy on Blu-ray a while back.
And I want it.
I've almost ordered it several times.
Yeah. It's one of those movies that gets referenced a lot in tokusatsu circles because they were really pushing the envelope for special effects for Japan and for, I would say, horror movies in general. You know, a lot of great makeup in those original films, a lot of great effects in the movies. So a little bit of a connection there. This one got on our list because right there, front and center on the poster is Daimajin, another, I believe, Kodokawa Film Studios owned character based on the 1960s Daimajin trilogy of period piece movies that we enjoyed a great deal, if memory serves, back there in season 2 of the podcast.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I do wish that we didn't watch them as close together, personally, as we did.
Yeah, they all were released in 1966, all three films, about 3 months apart each, which is crazy to think about, you know?
Yeah. And
we gave the first movie podcast total was an 8 out of 10, and the other two were 7 out of 10, which was very good. But the first one, I think we both considered kind of in the great category of our films.
Yes. And I've kind of been surprised consistently that we have not gotten another Daimajin thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really thought we would have more of that because of, like, how good those movies are, but also how influential they are.
It's been attempted several times. In fact, the director of this film, Takashi Miike.
Oh, you don't have to tell me about this guy. Like, one of the most prolific directors of all time, has directed like over 100 films, and including, you know, big classics like Audition, Ichi the Killer, the Dead or Alive series, not the video games, but the Yakuza movies. And he did the original Yakuza adaptation.
We'll talk about Takashi a good deal in this episode, but supposedly he almost got in 2007 a reboot of the Daimajin property off the ground. And of course, I think around that time is when they had a television series of like it was like a modern series of the ancestor of like the Temple Guardian, which we did not do on the show because I don't believe it's been translated to English, at least anywhere that I could find it. I've watched clips of it, which is very interesting, but it is not really a giant monster kind of property. Anyway, I'm surprised as well, Miles, because it seems like the Arrow box set of the Daimajin trilogy got some good press, some good reviews, and really revitalized interest in non-Godzilla kind of kaiju from the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, because, yeah, Arrow's got the Yokai trilogy. They have the Heisei Godzilla, or no, sorry, the Heisei Gamera trilogy and the Showa sets.
Yeah, all Gamera, right?
Yeah, they put out all of Gamera. So, I mean, yeah, they've done a good job with that stuff. And, I mean, this one, I think, is a SRS, is that what you said?
It is. It got, I believe, maybe both of the modern ones. There was also a...
Yeah, I feel like there's someone else has also distributed this movie, not just SRS. But I love a project like this. One that's referring to, like, you know, this old classic trilogy of yokai movies, which in and of itself is a reboot slash sequel of a 2005 Takeshi Miike movie, The Great Yokai War. And like the last one, it has a lot of kind of, I wouldn't say big, but a lot of, like, Japanese character actors or characters in the cast, but also familiar players of anyone who's seen several of Miike's movies, and including the fox face woman, or the Mrs. Fox. She's popped up in several of his. I know she was in the adaptation of Blade of the Immortal, as well as the live action Bleach movie.
Now, have you seen the 2005 Great Yokai War?
I have not, actually. Yeah. Even though I like Miike as a director and do respect him, he is far too prolific for his own good.
A lot of films.
And he has a wide range of types of movies that he likes to make. And I don't always love his movies, but I'm never turned away that he's doing a movie, but, like, I gotta look into it first, especially his early stuff. Loved doing the kind of what was called the Japanese extreme movement, which is similar to the French extreme movement. These horror movies that were, like, really pushed the kind of visual horrors, and especially with Ichi the Killer and Audition, they are not the easiest of watches, despite both being very good films. If someone tells me, "Oh yeah, I can't do that," I get it. but I also know that he has a whimsical side that allows him to do stuff like this, because the Great Yokai War is not just something that he's done just because he likes the old movies. Like, he has this side to him. There's a movie called The Happiness of the Katakuris, and it's like a family drama, a zombie movie, a musical, a surreal movie. Like, it's wild. And it's kind of wholesome, despite it being the movie that it is. It's just a weird musical comedy horror movie. And, like, this is the same guy that made, you know, Ichi the Killer. And then you watch The Great Yokai War Guardians, and you're like, oh, he made this super wholesome, like, yokai movie. I mean, this movie, essentially, to kind of set things up, this is a Japanese folklore-themed take on Labyrinth.
There's Labyrinth. I feel like there's elements of Neverending Story. Like, it seems to take inspiration from a lot of kids. I would go so far as to say fantasy horror. There's definitely, like, creepy things to it, but it is never outside the realm of, you know, a children's film, I don't think, at any point. And maybe I've watched clips and bits and pieces of the 2005 Great Yokai War. That one is similar, but I just feel like it's a little darker than this movie. Both have some very similar kind of characters and similar, you know, repeated yokai. So, but yeah, this movie feels like a reboot kind of that one. A lot of people have written that it's like a direct sequel. I don't feel like it's a direct sequel, but these movies were made 16 years apart. But it's definitely in the same vein.
It's a spiritual sequel, just because of that last scene that I had to look up, because I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah,
So
the first movie,
the homeroom teacher is the villain from the first movie. And the actor who plays him plays the main character in the first movie.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Kato, the Professor Kato, the villain in the original film is named Norikato. And even though Ryunosuke Ikki played the main character, he's, I guess, a kid in...
Oh, gosh. We've talked about him before, because he was... Was he the baby in Big Man Japan?
Well, he's Koichi in Godzilla Minus One.
That as well, of course. But we've talked about him because of Big Man Japan before as well.
Yes, yeah, yeah. He's in Big Man Japan. He's actually in a lot of Japanese movies I've seen because like Survive.
So good, yeah.
Which you've seen too.
Yep. Yep,
that movie is awesome. He's like all these actors have been in a bunch of stuff. Like he's done a bunch of Kenshin, Rurouni Kenshin stuff, playing Seda.
Yeah, so boy howdy, I kind of do wish we had news to report like last week of a sequel to this movie. I don't think there's another yokai.
There's a spinoff in which Gamera appears instead of Daimajin.
The novelization. Don't steal. We'll talk about that later. But
you just said, I wish there was more of this thing.
Well, yeah, there's both a manga adaptation, which I think is a little more focused on the yokai as opposed to the Daimajin at the end. But yeah, the novelization has the black turtle. I'll talk about it now. A black turtle that has all of Gamera's moves, like flies by spinning and shoots fireballs. And
don't they sing his song too?
Yes. Instead of the song that is the end of this movie to quell Daimajin, they have a Gamera song, which, you know, I would love to experience.
I would also prefer that too.
Only in Japanese, I think, the book. So no chance of that. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the great?
Yeah, this movie is interesting. So we kind of open up with this, you know, this kid not paying attention at school, falling asleep in class. Your typical protagonist for an 80s. Yeah. Kid movie like this.
Oh yeah, and originally he's got that yellow jacket on, which reminds me so much of the Goonies. You know, but he doesn't have that on for long in the movie.
Yeah, very very Goonies or Georgie from
Kay it. Watanabe is our
main kid. Kay and Dai Watanabe, he's the older brother, and he obviously is very much an older brother. He and his brother don't really seem to get along, at least in the scene that we have.
Little brothers are annoying.
They're standard older younger brother relationship, and they're told, "Oh, you guys have to fend for yourself because I have to work a late shift tonight." And which is a great setup. That's how this stuff always. I mean, even this is what makes it very like elaborate.
Their mom is out for the rest of the movie after that.
At the same time, we've had this yokai this reawaken and is going to summon like the great ancient evil that we don't get a name. We just keep getting you know who.
Yeah, and I imagine that maybe is a reference to the first film, maybe the
maybe or enemy just a that's bad Harry Potter reference, which is not great.
Yeah, but I was led to believe it's some kind of demon enemy, perhaps the ancestor of the Watanabes put away, I think.
Yeah, but essentially the fiend can only be defeated by the chosen ancestor of what was the original Watanabe's name? Suna Watanabe. And I like how this happens because it's the kind of destiny that seems like random chance. Like he and his boys go to some shrine and they pull some of the blessings, and his is blank and red. And that's what kicks off their weird adventure. And he can start seeing yokai. And
well, he drops it and then his brother picks it up. So his little brother gets, you know, his toes dipped into that world first. And it's probably my favorite sequence of the movie is when we first see kind of the yokai dream world. And get to see all the weird monsters for the first time. And then inside that kind of dreamlike sequence, we also see the yokai summit, which is so good, Miles. I don't know if you stopped and rewound that part.
It is very good.
So beyond Japanese yokai, which are the focus of the movie, this one scene has yokai from all over the world, and that includes Pennywise. There's like
there's a killer clown
from It. Well, the makeup is very much It coded.
It's great.
Japanese takes on, there's like a Japanese Frankenstein's monster. There's just a regular zombie. Count Dracula is there.
Yeah, there's a Medusa.
Medusa, I enjoyed. The Yeti is a great. It's just like
Yeti.
maybe 3 or 4 minutes of the film, and they have like tons of monsters that we don't see again.
Well, yeah, because don't a lot of them are just like, oh, this is a Japanese problem, we don't care.
Yeah, yeah, they leave it to the yokai of Japan. But I like that it's just, there's like an international kind of summit of monsters from all over the world. But yeah, they're there to speak about the impending destruction as a monster known as the Yokaiju is set to cross Japan and destroy Tokyo on the way to breaking this.
Which, how great deal. Of a name is Yokaiju?
It is so, I'm like giving it an additional point, I think, just for the name of yeah. the monster. Yokaiju is so good. Agree. It is, until the end of the movie, it's not really very good. It seems to be made up of, or I think it's implied to be, the ghost energy of like millions of sea creatures.
Yeah.
And at first it kind of looks like a nautilus shell, but you find out at the end of the movie, it's like maybe the bones of all those creatures in a weird,
but it's also snake. This bald, like baby headed, like ghost that oh, flies yeah. out and licks people.
There's so many references I feel like are lost on an American watching
oh,
this.
Yeah. Yeah,
that would probably make sense to a Japanese audience.
I wish I certainly had more of a background in Japanese folklore. Like I have some urban legend background from my horror movie obsessions.
Yeah.
But like, I was kind of surprised that we didn't see like a Kuchisaka Ane in there. And which is like one of my favorite urban legends. We saw things that were a little close because you had like the one woman with the stillborn baby. And you have
some pretty brutal stuff for a kid's movie.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's a Yuki Onna, so it's not completely, or not, no, Yuki Onna is the snow one, which I love the fact that like every time she's around, you can only see snow falling on her. And well, sometimes it's also like in the peripheral sometimes. And I yeah. love that that attention to detail was present, because I thought that was fantastic.
The end of the movie, she has one of those little personal fans and she's like keeping herself cool. There's a lot of fun little in jokes with the monsters. The
I wish I could have had, I mean, you could not have had a Kuchisaka Onna in this movie and still kept it a kids movie, because it's just such a, I mean, yeah, you have like trolls and zombies and stuff, but they're,
yeah,
a little bit different.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I'm a huge kaiju fan. There's a lot of like actual mythological kind of creatures that are in the yokai umbrella. And then in, I think like the 1800s, one author made about 100 other yokai, like just off the top of his head. And they have kind of been incorporated in the same like books of yokai. So some of them have like no historical or mythological kind of background, but obviously something like, you know, the Tengu character who was pretty funny. And
yeah, the girl who plays the snow lady, she is has been a Japanese idol. She was part of AKB48.
Oh,
and more importantly to me, talking about Japanese urban legends, she is the lead role in Koji Shirayoshi, who's like one of my favorite Japanese horror directors, Teke Teke series. She's in both of them. And she's quite a good actress. And so like just seeing her in a small role like this and like really hammering up that, like, you know, such a cold heart, like just excellent performance. Like the fact that so much, and I mean, again, this is the kind of director that he is, because like Miike like has, because he's, at least he used to be known for this very frenetic, fast style. Like you had to have every frame kind of packed with details so that you could just kind of, you'd have to pause and pick things out. And I love that he still has this attention for detail, that even though it's a kid's movie, it's mostly about these Watanabe kids. Like every single yokai had attention to detail, has its own little thing, even if it's in the behind this, like the main action, like something's going on. And I like that guy that's always washing his freaking beans, you know.
Oh my god. So he was a major or I guess a plot point character in the 2005 film, but yeah, every time he came back, it's I think comedy that translates across languages.
Yeah, it's a very good sight gag.
His look and the bean washing when everyone charges at the end of the actual yokai war against the yokaiju. He just like sits down and continues washing the beans.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff all around. And like I said, good for a kid's movie when you're talking about maybe one of the most violent directors of all time. It is funny that he has this, you know, weird kids movie side to his catalog as well with that.
I love that, though. I mean, this is a very Spielbergian movie. And I love that he has that side to him because, yeah. I mean, you can say the same thing about Spielberg. You know, his first like major motion picture was, you know, one of the biggest blockbusters of all time. You know, it was his first picture, but like, you know, mm-hmm. and Jaws is essentially a horror film.
Yeah. And, yeah. and he's got some great kids films as well.
To kind of, yeah, go from there. Like I said, I've seen him like kind of show this other side. I obviously hadn't seen the first Great Yokai War, but this movie, I gotta say, is so strong. Like, this is a really, really, really solid kids' fantasy film. And yeah. I think both kids are fantastic as well. We haven't talked about them, but they are great little actors.
No, and that really can make or break one of these movies. I will say, as far as other kaiju films, that this is probably the closest related to, actually reminds me a great deal of the Mothra trilogy, the Toho 90s.
Especially the third one where the kids are like in that temple or whatever.
Yeah, that one especially. But yeah, they're both very fantasy-based kind of films. And we haven't really talked too much about the kaiju of the hour, the return of Daimajin, who's called Bujin in this film. And was that the name of the
I think it was the name original? Of the statue in the movies. Because I think they always refer to him as Bujin, if I'm not mistaken.
It's been so long since I've seen them. But what did you think about the CGI update to the monster, to the statue? Very different from the original.
I think he looks good. Mm-hmm. I think he's cool looking. I wish there was a guy in there.
I feel like they could have done a great deal of that.
Love the fiery cracks. I like the cracks that make him like seem like when he's alive, it's like a flame has been lit, and you know he's got the flame on top of his head, so it's like this. He's got this like life fire in him, which also when the energy comes out, it makes a great visual. I thought that was a great effect. I truly like the way he looks. He moves a little goofy, but it's to be expected. Yeah. I wish he was in the movie for a more substantial amount of time. Like, that fight is nothing.
Well, yeah, he has a pretty awesome where his sword extends like thousands of feet long and he like cuts the yokaiju in half, rides on a dragon skeleton, which was another kind of cool large mm-hmm. monster creature in the film. And then that's pretty much it for his attacks until, you know, they sing the monster to appease the yokaiju. And then all of a sudden, Daimajin turns on the kaiju and starts attacking, and they have to kind of go up against Daimajin. So, I mean, he's in the last act of the movie, and the majority of the movie is, you know, finding the kids to awaken him. You know, honestly, he's probably in about as much of the movie as, like, one or two of the 60s Daimajin films, like as far as animated goes. So much of his time in those films were as a silent statue. But yeah, I like the update myself. I definitely think I could have done with more of him and more of the yokaiju in its more dragon form, which was crazy, the scale difference between them.
Yes.
Daimajin felt like maybe 50 feet tall, and the yokaiju was like 300 or 400 feet. It was very, well, very big.
I do wish the yokaiju, I don't know, yeah, did a little bit more, because yeah, you get this, it turns into a dragon, you think it's gonna be a whole situation. I actually like the finish, though. I like that they beat it with this peaceful song. And
yeah, it's great, like, for kids' movie.
It's great for a kids' movie because it also has the whole reason as to why even the one yokai leader who is like, no, it's time for the earth be cleansed. He's you know, changing his tune because, okay, humanity does have some members that are, you know, could possibly turn things around. And or the yokaiju will come back in a different form and, you know, cleanse the earth. Mm-hmm. But I like this. I think it really earns its ending because you see the change in our lead kid through the course of the movie. You see his heart, and he, like, especially once he gets his powers and stuff, he's like, I don't want to fight you, mm-hmm. but I will. And I like that because it's the opposite of what I would think an American kids adventure movie would do. It would have actively had him fight and defeat the things and move on. He doesn't want to hurt anybody, so he fights to defend himself. But as soon as the battle's over, and he tries to help everyone else, and that is such a remarkably rare thing to see in a movie like this, you know, from our perspective. So I really appreciated the kid story aspect of it. I thought it was extremely sincere, well thought out, well paced. Like, that's the mm-hmm. thing is, like, I do have an issue with this film's third act, but the pacing's not the issue, even though the ending does feel like once Daimajin kind of goes on his little rampage, you're like, all right, let's, this ain't Lord of the Rings. I don't need 10 more endings. Let's wrap this up. Like, it should have ended right then and there. I know that maybe the part of the Daimajin is that he does wreck everything, even if he's been summoned by someone who believes in him.
And so, a character trait that's followed over from the movies. Yeah. I enjoyed that.
I did enjoy that, but at the same time, I was like, all right, we're at 2 hours plus here, guys. let's cut it out.
Yeah.
But there's so much about this movie that's so enjoyable. I thought all of the costuming was really great, and all of the yokai were exceptionally cast, especially the fox, Miss Fox.
She was great. Yeah, I like I said, I feel like a lot of the yokai and kind of like kids elements are probably work a lot better on a younger Japanese audience.
Sure,
but I will say, We've already gotten like a couple of Japanese modern era, I guess, kids films. And I think I liked both of them maybe just a little bit more than this one. Well, I don't know if Love and Peace is necessarily a kids film, but it's got like the whole Santa Claus element to it. And Jellyfish Eyes is the other one that was, you know, that's a great kids.
Well, you know how I feel about Jellyfish Eyes.
Yeah, we're both pretty positive about that one.
Yeah, that one's 10, I think, for my
personal enjoyment.
Yeah.
This movie is up there, but yeah, I don't know. There's just definitely some weird elements that
I've also heard rumors that Jellyfish Eyes 2 is finally making progress.
Please. Yeah, online this movie has gotten some, I would say, middling reviews in some places. It only has a 5.6 on IMDb, a 3.2 out of 5 on Letterboxd, but it has an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes for its reviews from critics, which is honestly pretty surprising. This movie did come out in, I want to say, both the US and Japan in 2021. Japan theaters in August 13th of 2021. And I want to say maybe the same for the US release. End of August 28th, which is surprising. You know, we're still in the middle of the pandemic at that point in 2021. So this movie did not make a lot of money, but it went into, you know, home video release almost immediately. The DVDs came out, I want to say the same year, maybe around Christmas. But SRS didn't get its version that it put out. But once again, DVD, Blu-ray, and VHS you can get, which is wild. That only happened last year, 2024. But this is one that I think I might go back and get that Arrow trilogy, because these are fun films. They're cool. They're creepy. They're a little bit, you know, there's some tokusatsu wizardry. There's some fun puppetry in parts, and I would say pretty good CGI in this movie. There are parts that are like, but like, you know, at the end when Daimajin is back in statue form and then starts like evaporating, it's really good looking stuff, you know?
Yeah, I fully agree.
Are you ready to rate this film?
Yeah, I was really, really taken with this one. I think it's a really great kids fantasy movie. I obviously wish I understood some of the more significant elements in terms of the folklore and some of the traditions utilized. It's certainly something I want to look into. But I thought the kids were great. I thought it was a good adventure. It certainly tapped into some of those great 80s and early 90s kids adventure fantasy films. to mostly a large success. The third act is a little wonky. And, you know, I really would have liked some more actual kaiju action from that sequence. Like, I love the point that it's making. But at the same time, like, if you're going to have these massive creatures, like, let them do a little damage. Let them do a little rumble a little bit. And
let them get crazy. Let them get nuts.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. You're trying to prevent the destruction, and having these two massive things would just create more. So I do understand that. But I had a great time with this movie. The music is great. The special effects are great. The script is solid. The acting is fantastic. It looks so slick. I'm at a really strong 8 out of 10. I think this is a really, really strong movie.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I feel like I would easily watch this movie again. I think it probably will do good in like a back to back with the 2005 one, which I want to check out. I think it's on Tubi as well. So boy howdy, we've got
this also currently. I didn't watch on Tubi. I watched on YouTube the official free movies on YouTube.
Yeah, I watched it on YouTube as well. I don't know if this one is on Tubi, but the 2005 one I think is. Yeah, I'm right there with you. 8 out of 10. I think this is one that, you know, it's a big budget kind of special effects film, but it's also a fun kids movie. Actually kind of reminded me a little bit of Monster Squad in a few ways.
Well, hold on there.
Well, just seeing Frankenstein in the
vampire mummy. Well, sure, but that is where those like, comparisons end.
Well, as far as now, like an enjoyable...
If you had a leather jacket saying, I'm in the goddamn club, aren't I? Then we might have, you know...
Wolfman's Got Nards kind of conversation. No, it just feels like a similar fun kind of kids monster movie. And it just doesn't seem like there are that many of those these days. And I like that it's all from Japanese yokai point of view. And that's going to lead me into its technical score. There's definitely some shortcomings with this film. It is not perfect. Like I said, I think probably a good amount of it could have been cut down. The screenwriter is Yusuke Watanabe, which is kind of funny that the main characters are also Watanabes, but he co-wrote the Attack on Titan live action movie adaptations. So we have seen his work before, co-wrote that with another author, and has done other manga and book adaptations into film, whereas this one's kind of a reboot. I think the script is pretty good, pretty strong. I feel like I said, so much of it is lost on me not having grown up with those 60s films, not having grown up with yokai kind of tales. But it's hard for me to fault things like the acting or the directing was very good. So I'm given a very strong 8 out of 10 for its technical aspects. Just not perfect for me. And I think yeah, you can go back and watch clips of that 2005 movie, and the special effects and the makeup in this one are just so far advanced. It felt like they were trying to make a kind of a more throwback version of a yokai movie with that film. If you go and look at some of the costuming and makeup, but yeah, this one's great. It's very far ahead for me. What about you for the technical aspect?
I'm right there with you. I think this is an exceptionally strong movie. It's well directed. It's well shot. The special effects look great for the most part. Some of the CGI spectacles could have used a little more TLC, but I mean, nothing crazy. The costuming for all the yokai is, I mean, just pitch perfect. The performances are excellent. The kids are great. And that, like you said earlier, that can make or break a film like this. I think the third act is, like, in general, is where the movie's weakest all around, but especially in that script, that's what really holds this movie back. And I do think the movie, while it clips along pretty nicely, does have a couple of pacing issues here and there. But no, I mean, it's a really strong, strong movie, and I will definitely watch this again. I would definitely like most of the technical aspects are, you know, they're pretty good. They're not perfect, but they're pretty great. And so, yeah, I'm at an 8 out of 10.
For its importance, I am docking a little bit because it just feels like Daimajin, despite being the both like protagonist and antagonist at one point, is just in too little of this film. Wish we got a little bit more. And I wish, honestly, the director Takahashi Miike's reboot had happened. I feel like maybe we would have had a stronger base to revisit this character if that was the case. So for its importance as a kaiju movie, this does feel kaiju adjacent.
It is. Yeah.
It is a great yokai movie. It is a okay kaiju movie. It is one that you can probably skip if you are trying to hit the highlights of kaiju cinema. So I'm giving it a 6 out of 10 for its importance as a kaiju film. I will say it is awesome to see Daimajin in CGI, even if it's just for, you know, 10 minutes or whatever. But what about you, Miles?
You know, I was actually on the fence. I was gonna give it a 6, but I think I might bump it a little bit just because the kid-centric kaiju or kaiju-adjacent movie is a big, strong presence in the kaiju subgenre. Because, like, outside of your Mothra and your Gamera films, a lot of the kids tend to not be great. They tend not to be a strong part of a lot of these movies. Mm-hmm. I personally like All Monsters Attack, but like that movie is certainly maligned because of the kid aspect of it. And I think this does a lot of justice to that. This definitely stands along the lines of like a Jellyfish Eyes.
Oh yeah.
And I think if we're talking about kaiju, we're going to eventually talk about yokai because, you know, some get turned into kaiju at some points in kaiju history. And I think as an example of utilizing yokai and honestly as a strong kaiju adjacent, I would bring this up quite a bit, I think, in conversation as a good example next to Jellyfish Eyes. So I'm going to bump this up to a 7 as a very strong kaiju adjacent movie. Also, it gets that extra point because yokaiju is a great freaking name. And we said at the beginning, it gets bumped up because of that. And this is where it gets bumped up because of that.
Yeah, I mean, just great, great little monster name. Right. So it's not enough to bring up the score completely, but that does put you at an 8 out of 10. I'm at a 7 out of 10. And our podcast final is just below the demarcation line at a 7 out of 10, which is very good. Honestly,
perfectly happy with that.
Maybe kind of higher than I originally thought going into this it would be. But yeah, I was hoping for more kaiju action, but I was still pretty pleasantly pleased by the film that we got. Like I said, even without the kaiju, it kept me invested, which is really all you can really ask for in a movie these days. So yeah, that is The Great Yokai War Guardians.
I'm very happy with that one.
give us another movie with more kaiju action and we will watch it. Kadokawa Films, Toho Films, where... No, I will tell you where, if you want to chat all things kaiju, you can find us online on the social medias at Kaiju Versus History. Our website is kaijuversushistory.com, where you can see all of our episodes, wherever you get podcasts. You can rate and review our show. You can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. And probably the most active way to get in touch with us is the Cosmic Crit Discord. That is another podcast that we are on, a tabletop playing podcast, and we have a whole sub section that is just about kaiju. We talk about a lot about news, rescreenings, new movies that we watch there. And you can also take a look at our movie list and our films in 5-star rated format on Letterboxd. Check out our Letterboxd account. So this movie would get a 3.5 stars on Letterboxd. Is that what 7 is? Yeah.
Yeah.
3.5 stars out of 5, which puts it pretty much close to the average on Letterboxd right now. And I think that's a pretty good score for it. Miles, what are we doing next week?
Well, thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners. And we're going to catch you next week when we take a look at a comedic spin on the giant monster movies of yore with an exciting title. Can a town attacked by pinching soon-to-be boiled foes survive when a giant kaiju horseshoe crab attacks? Find out with us next time and tune in for History Versus Crabs.